Hello, and welcome to Pod Rights, a series of podcasts from the Australian Human Rights Commission. I'm Graham Innes, the Disability Discrimination Commissioner. Sexual harassment is something that we hear more and more about these days. Whether it's women in retail or men in parliament, it never seems to be far from the headlines. And while this is certainly not a good thing, it does mean, as a society, that we're becoming more aware and hopefully less tolerant of sexual harassment. There's a lot of work being done to achieve a number of things to challenge sexual harassment, to find ways that we can prevent sexual harassment, to drive its incidence down, to promote awareness of what it is, and to develop actions that can be taken. And a relatively new area is the use of bystander intervention strategies. In fact, just today, the Commission has released a research paper entitled Encourage, Support, Act: Bystander Approaches to Sexual Harassment in the Workplace. Written by Associate Professor Paula McDonald from QUT in Brisbane and Dr. Michael Flood from the University of Wollongong. I'm joined by Paula today, and welcome to Pod Rights, Paula.
Thanks, Graham.
Now, firstly, Paula, I'm interested in sharing with the listeners something about your career and your expertise in this area, and how you and Michael, researchers from two different universities, came to write this paper for the Commission.
Sure, well, excuse me. Michael and I came to this with, I suppose, quite different but somewhat overlapping experience and expertise. Mm-hmm. My work over a number of years now has been, I've done a number of studies around gendered forms of workplace discrimination. So, for example, studies on pregnancy and family responsibilities discrimination, as well as sexual harassment. And I'm currently nearing the end of a large 3-year Australian Research Council grant on sexual harassment specifically. And I'm also particularly interested in how the structures and policies of workplaces are kind of consistent with the everyday practices of the working relationship.
Yep.
Now, Michael, on the other hand, came to this joint work, and I hope I'm representing Michael in an okay way here. But his particular expertise was in the prevention of violence towards women.
Okay.
So we're bystander, and in this particular area, bystander approaches are much more thorough and have been sort of implemented in a much more strategic way. So we brought these areas of expertise together, and hopefully with the potential for a more collective kind of response to sexual harassment, which, as you alluded to in your introduction, is a persistent and pervasive problem in many workplaces.
And can, of course, involve violence in some situations. So
absolutely.
Two very relevant sort of streams of experience.
Mm.
Well, let's define sexual harassment, Paula, because some of us have a different sort of understanding or appreciation of what it might what might constitute it. How did you define it for the purposes of this study?
Yes, well, sexual harassment can be defined in a number of ways. I guess most commonly it's defined according to its its enshrinement in legislation, and particularly the Sex Discrimination Act.
Mm.
And in that act, it's defined as an unwelcome sexual advance or an unwelcome request for sexual favours to
yep.
the person harassed. It can also be understood as a psychological construct, where the sex-related conduct exceeds the resources of the person being harassed or negatively affects or threatens their well-being. And then, of course, there's the behaviours associated with sexual harassment, and they include things like unwelcome physical contact, showing pornography in the workplace, unwanted requests, repeated unwanted requests for dates, and offensive sexual jokes or innuendo and so on. But I just want to sort of point out, because sometimes it can be equally important to point out what sexual harassment is not.
Yes, I'm glad I was going to ask
you
that.
Yeah. So You'll notice I mentioned a couple of times in there unwelcome and unwanted, and this is a really key word in the definition. So it's not about workplace romance, and it's not about other conduct that is welcome, even if it is of a sexual nature. So that, it, that that unwelcome, unwanted is an important distinction.
So encourage, support, act are the three concepts in the title of the paper, and they deal with the concepts of bystander action and bystander intervention strategies. So firstly, Paula, who's a bystander?
Yes, well, we had Michael and I had a number of, you know, very involved conversations about this, but in the end we adopted quite a broad definition of a bystander, and that includes individuals who directly witness sexual harassment in the workplace, but also those who may not have directly witnessed the sexual harassment, because of course this is a problem which is often hidden or not transparent or happens behind closed doors. So in fact, direct witnesses to sexual harassment are relatively rare. But we conceptualise bystander as also including people both inside and outside the workplace who are otherwise informed of the sexual harassment or acquire knowledge of the problem at some stage in the process. And so within workplaces that might include people like co-workers or, you know, direct line managers or HR managers or even customers. We also included people outside the workplace who become sort of embroiled in the sexual harassment, and that included people like partners or friends or family members of the target of the harassment who offer some kind of support or even a more active involvement in the harassment. So we took the, you know, rightly or wrongly, we took this broader view of bystanders for a couple of reasons, and one is that there's fairly strong evidence to show that bystanders can often experience similar negative effects of sexual harassment as the actual targets can.
Yes.
And also that some of my other work on sexual harassment indicates, that's previous and current, that bystanders outside of the, which is probably the most contentious part of it, that bystanders outside of the workplace can actually get quite heavily involved in the process. So they do things like, I've seen numerous examples of, for example, parents who have adolescent workers or young workers as children, that, and they will often intervene on behalf of their children experiencing harassment.
Yes.
And also partners can sometimes get quite involved. For example, they might report the harassment to managers on behalf of their partner, or, you know, they might even confront the harasser directly in the workplace.
Yeah. I think it's really important that you've gone much broader than the physically co-located bystander. I have to say, as a person who's dealt with these sorts of matters as a conciliator, and also as someone who's heard cases, I pondered before I read your paper how you'd enroll that broader group of bystanders, because I completely agree with you. They play a key role in the process.
Yes, and I think, you know, the point of the exercise is that we start to, and I mean we, you know, as in a society, start to see the responsibility for preventing and responding to sexual harassment as a kind of collective responsibility.
Yep.
So that collective really includes a whole range of people that are connected to the sexual harassment.
In the same way as a lot of the research and the work around violence against women tries to enroll other men in the process of stopping it.
Yeah, exactly. And that work around violence against women has been really effective in getting men involved in responding, oftentimes in very effective ways, to other men's violent behaviours.
Yes.
And, you know, I mean, in the workplace, it's a particular context, and we need to look at that.
Sure.
But certainly there are some potential for some transfers there.
Mm. Mm. Now, we're talking about sexual harassment at work here, as you've just said.
Mm.
Why is the workplace so important to the content? To the context of bystanders and to the strategies that you're proposing?
Yeah, the workplace context is really critical to consider here. So there's quite a lot of research to show that the workplace circumstances in which sexual harassment takes place, they have a strong influence on the potential to encourage bystanders to act or respond to sexual harassment. And some of the factors that seem particularly important that we've outlined in the report are, firstly, the culture of the work environment. So whether there's a lot of sexualised behaviours or a culture that kind of denigrates women more broadly, and whether those behaviours and kind of nuances of the workplace are normalised.
Yes.
And of course that's really important in even recognising that sexual harassment has occurred in the first place, because sometimes a range of behaviours that, you know, we would say are defined in the Sex Discrimination Act are so normalised or entrenched or accepted in a workplace that it's not even clear to the people in it that sexual harassment has actually occurred.
Yeah.
The other really important part of the workplace context is and the potential for, you know, developing bystander strategies is whether or not bystanders can feel safe in making a complaint or reporting sexual harassment.
Yes.
In the sense that they're safe from any reprisals for doing that, because you know, we know that targets themselves often experience victimisation or some kind of punishment for making a complaint.
Mm.
And equally there's the possibility of bystanders experiencing those same negative repercussions. So that's a really important part of the workplace context as well.
And it's interesting what you say, isn't it? Because often people in workplaces will say, oh, but we've always had those pictures on the walls, or those are always the sorts of comments that we make about the girls who work here. You know, it's
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is the involvement of a bystander different to the person who's the target of the sexual harassment themselves, Paula? And you've answered this question to a certain extent, but can the motivations to intervene vary?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't have a lot of evidence of this, but there's some quite nice conceptual work which suggests that bystanders take into account a number of factors before before they actually A, recognise that sexual harassment has occurred, and then B, the likelihood that they'll actually respond. So, for example, we know from the violence prevention work that men will, bystanders will take into account the personal threat that might be there to them. So, for example, male bystanders can sometimes feel reluctant to act for fear of being seen as weak or gay or unmasculine by their male peers.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they take into account, you know, or you know, they need to recognise whether this is actually an injustice or whether this is just sort of part of the normal social fabric of the workplace, and this again gets back to the, you know, what's normative in a workplace.
Yep.
And they will also sometimes consider, it's kind of their connectedness to the target themselves, and if they identify strongly or they really like the, you know, it sounds simple, but if they really like and identify with the target, then it seems that they are more likely to respond or act on their behalf. But of course, you know, this is a complex picture because, you know, it depends on the size of the workplace and the level of support that's perceived by management in the workplace, the relative power difference between the bystander and the harasser. I mean, if the harasser is your immediate boss, then that makes it more risky for you to act on somebody else's behalf.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though, because you talk about whether the person is liked by the bystander, and I often used to think that the people whose complaints I dealt with, sexual harassment complaints I dealt with, were often the person in the workplace who wasn't very popular, because they're the one that sort of gets picked on sometimes, and then it turns from that into sexual harassment, or sexual harassment is a method used. So it's interesting that you make that observation.
That's right, and that almost becomes a double whammy.
That's right.
Because not only are they the one that's isolated and harassed, but then they also receive no support.
No support,
yeah.
Yeah, no, that's what I've seen. Yeah. You've talked about how you've drawn on the experiences of bystander strategies in other areas, particularly in the violence area. Can you talk briefly about this part of the research and some of the approaches that you looked at? What did you learn from that?
Yes, well, because there's not really any well-developed frameworks for bystander interventions in workplace sexual harassment, we did a broad sweep of a range of different areas that we thought may be relevant to this kind of potential. So now they weren't always identified as areas of, you know, involving bystanders particularly, but to give you some examples there, we looked at the whistleblower area of work, and it's conceivable that we could say that bystanders are actually whistleblowers. You know, we could think of them as that. And that kind of area offers quite a lot of potential, because it's had a lot of media attention, whistleblowers, and there's a strong community level support for protecting whistleblowers, and there's also some good strong legal protections for them.
Yes.
So that may translate quite well into bystander interventions in sexual harassment specifically. We also looked at, as I said, men's violence towards women, and that's been a strong area. So there've been some very effective interventions that have been evaluated, say, on American college campuses.
Yes.
And there's also a lovely, they also have in that area is a lovely framework around primary, secondary and tertiary prevention strategies, which is kind of a neat way to understand how we might take this area forward. And we also looked at work on employee voice, which is about the extent to which employees have an opportunity to safely communicate suggestions and complaints in the workplace and have their views taken seriously. So we brought all those areas together to try and understand how these interventions might be developed further.
Sure. You've listed some principles to help develop bystander intervention strategies in the workplace, Paula. What are the principles?
Yeah, so from the violence prevention area, there's five sort of general principles, and they include things like that any strategies that are implemented have to be pitched at multiple levels and at be consistent with the kind of setting that it's going into.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be underpinned by, some strong theoretical foundations.
Yep.
They need to incorporate both educational material and communication materials in that sort of broader suite of change management and change strategies.
Mm.
They need to consider the relevant context that they're being implemented in, and they need to be evaluated. That's an important part of the framework as well.
Sure. And finally, Paula, how can this paper be used to contribute to the fight against sexual harassment in the workplace? What can we do with it?
Yeah, well, I think a number of issues that I've outlined to you today, you know, could have an immediate impact. And the most obvious is the opportunity for a lot of organisations, which unfortunately tend to often do this quite poorly, and that's to improve their complaints management processes, to, you know, to really take notifications and complaints of sexual harassment seriously and to deal with them in an assertive and timely way. I'd also like to see organisations pay attention to the types of the language and the everyday conduct that occurs, and if there's a really highly sexualised conduct culture, or a culture that denigrates women, that something, you know, that steps are taken to correct this. Mm. I'd also like to see some other researchers and practitioners perhaps build on the framework that we've developed and that's outlined in some detail in the report. And of course, we do actually need some more research in this area, because this is more a conceptual piece, and we don't have a lot of hard evidence about the kinds of bystander actions that actually happen in everyday workplaces. And so it would be good to see some more of that.
Mm. Well, thanks, Paula. An important topic, and one that, well, we hear about the well-publicised cases, as I said earlier, in retail or in Parliament, one that clearly many of us can do something about, and many of us, unfortunately, are still experiencing in the workplace. So thanks very much for being part of PodRights.
You're very welcome.
And thanks to all of you listening to PodRights. Remember, this podcast is for you, so if you have a suggestion with someone about someone with whom I should talk, or a comment on the podcast, please email me at podrights@humanrights.gov.au, or contact me on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for Graham Innes, GraeMeinnes. Also, if you want to engage more on human rights issues, you can have a look at the tellmesomethingidontknow.gov.au, our Something in Common project, where you can read fascinating human rights facts and stories, participate in polls, add your own content, and find out what you can do to advance human rights issues in Australia. Maybe you can find out more about what you can do as a bystander of sexual harassment. And keep your podcatchers ready for the next PodRights in the series, because human rights are for everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Graham Innes. Goodbye for now.